Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Nonprofit U, a forum where nonprofit stakeholders can share lessons learned and discuss the latest developments in the industry. My name is Valerie Leonard, your host. I'm a consultant to nonprofits, and I specialize in community and organizational development. I work with nonprofit organizations to help them make a stronger impact to their clients and communities. You can find Nonprofit U on Facebook and Twitter, and I encourage you to comment early and often using the hashtags Nonprofit U, The Law Project, or Community Benefits Agreement. You can also email me questions at consulting@valeriefleonard.com or send messages through Facebook and Twitter. You'll find the Nonprofit U fan page on Facebook, and the Twitter account is @NonprofitU. We'll be taking questions by phone and from our chat room at about the 20-minute mark, and I make a correction there. The chat room, for one reason or another, is not functioning, but we'll be taking questions by phone at the 20-minute mark, and the call-in number is 347-884-8121. Again, that number is 347-884-8121. Today's episode is Benefiting the Community by Mutual Agreement. We'll talk about community benefits agreements, what they are, the pros and cons, and some of the Law Project's work in supporting local community-based organizations in their quest for greater democracy and development. So not only are they working with single organizations, but they're also working with coalitions. And again, we encourage you to call in with questions and participate. 20-minute mark. The call-in number is 347-884-8121. Again, that number is 347-884-8121. And if you happen to be looking at your screen, you should see this number on your screen as well if you're in the video forum. Nonprofit professionals, community activists, and other community stakeholders are especially encouraged to call in and share your stories. Our guests for today are attorneys Jody Adler and Allegra Sarah Fisher. Jody Adler is the director of the Law Project, and Allegra Fisher is a staff attorney with the Law Project. And I'll let them come to you in their own way and introduce themselves because they could do a much better job than I could. So I want to thank you, Jody and Allegra, so much for being guests. It's indeed an honor to have you. First of all, can you introduce yourselves? And then, Jody, if you can, you know, give us a little bit of background on the Law Project, how it got started, and your programs and services.
Sure. Thanks, Valerie. And this is Jody. So I've been an attorney with the Law Project for the past 20 years. And before that, I was an attorney for the U.S. Small Business Administration. But I got my start in this area as a community organizer in Edgewater and Uptown many, many years ago before law school. Part of the reason I went to law school.
That explains it.
Yeah. Right. Part of the reason I went to law school was to be a better advocate on behalf of communities and people living in communities in need. It took me a while to get back to doing that work, but that is why I came back to the Law Project. So that's a little bit about myself.
This
is
Allegra.
Okay.
Hi, Valerie. This is Allegra. Thank you so much for having us today. I am a staff attorney here, as you said, and I joined the Law Project this June with a focus on a project looking at community benefits agreement and, more broadly than that, also equitable development, equitable and inclusive development in Chicago communities. And prior to that, I had been working in the legal aid arena for about 7 years, representing families in the child welfare system as well as homeowners in foreclosure. And I made the decision to become a lawyer after experiences during and after college, working on various different community organizing efforts, including living wage campaigns in Florida. And so I'm very happy to be back working in partnership with local communities as an attorney now.
Awesome, awesome. And I thank you both for your service. And I know from time to time cities work with developers to encourage them to develop in marginalized communities. And one of the ways they do this is by offering a number of incentives, you know, things like TIF, tax breaks, environmental remediation, et cetera. And in some cases, the developers enter into a redevelopment agreement in which they provide some semblance of a benefit to the local community. On the other hand, activists have argued that if there is any such language included in the redevelopment agreement, it usually doesn't go far enough. It doesn't guarantee that the community will benefit in such a way as they're not, quote-unquote, on the outside looking in on developments in their own communities. Can you tell us what a community benefit agreement is and why a community would insist on having a CBA when the developer is already required to enter into a redevelopment agreement?
Sure, and this is Allegra again. So a community benefits agreement is a legally binding agreement between a developer coming into a community and typically a coalition of community organizations. And it's an agreement that addresses a broad range of community needs that can include affordable housing investments, commitments to hire local residents, to pay certain livable wages, to provide green space, to make investments in education. It kind of runs the gamut in terms of the types of investments that communities often request through a community benefits agreement process. And basically, it's a process and ultimately an agreement that allows local residents, to share in the benefits of development coming into their community, and mm-hmm. helps to prevent displacement of local residents as well as small businesses that have been in the community for a long time. And to address your question, you know, even though there are sometimes what we could call community benefits written into redevelopment agreements between a developer and the city, why should we have an additional agreement? And so mm-hmm. with redevelopment agreements, in Chicago, we can focus on Chicago, there are various different city ordinances that require any developer receiving certain types of public subsidies, including the TIF funds, tax increment financing funds that you mentioned, as well as different types of tax subsidies and other incentives. There are ordinances that require those developers to comply with certain benefits processes, including doing some local hiring, making sure that some of the subcontracts awarded go to minority business enterprise and women business enterprises in the city, mm-hmm. and various other requirements. And what a community benefits agreement does is it provides a whole another additional level of investment in a community, really, because it is a legally binding agreement between the community, often a coalition of groups, and the developer. Mm-hmm. With a redevelopment agreement, which is the agreement between the city and the developer, there is no private right of action. Citizens and residents don't have the ability to enforce that agreement. So if a developer is not complying with their requirements under that agreement, residents can go speak with their elected officials about that, but they can't actually take action to make sure that those requirements are enforced. In addition mm-hmm. to that, community benefits agreements really, these redevelopment agreements they represent sort of the floor of what a developer could do in a community. Community benefits agreements raise the floor and ensure that developers are actually being responsive to what the local community wants and sees as important for its residents.
Okay, so when you say the floor, you're basically saying the bare minimum to pass legal muster.
Right. And for example, with affordable housing, any developer who is receiving TIF money has to set aside a certain percentage of units as affordable. And so a community benefits agreement might put into place an agreement whereby they have to designate additional units as affordable, or it might sort of lower the bar in terms of affordability to allow families with a little bit of a lower income access to those affordable units. So those are that's just one example of something that, that might not follow or might not flow from your typical redevelopment agreement, but that a community benefits agreement can come in and can strengthen those protections.
Okay, so those agreements are really bilateral. It's not like the onus is strictly on the developer, right? Doesn't it also hold the community accountable to fulfill its end of the bargain?
Yes, absolutely. So when a community enters into a CBA with a developer, they're agreeing to support the development coming in. And so once that agreement is signed and the developer has agreed to, you know, higher percentages of local workers, to pay certain wages, to make those investments in housing, et cetera, then the community is agreeing to abide by the contract and to support the development. So that means that they're going to support zoning changes that the developer may be requesting. They're going to agree to, you know, not to try and stop the project and to support it and moving forward as it, you know, in as quick a way as possible so that the developer can get everything going and construction underway. And so a community definitely needs to understand that, you know, they have to uphold their end of the bargain. And often there's more than one organization, usually in a coalition, that's signing an agreement with a developer. And so all of those organizations have to be on the same page to agree that they're going to support this project going forward and understand that the developer, you know, if they breach the agreement, if they don't uphold their end of the bargain, if they try to put a stop to something that the developer's doing, then the developer's not required to, you know, to comply, to keep up their end of the bargain and comply with the agreement to hire local workers, for example.
Okay, great. So I want everybody to remember you're listening to Nonprofit U Blog Radio Talk Show with Valerie F. Leonard. That's me. Today's guests are Allegra Fisher as well as Jody Atler. They're attorneys with the Law Project. We'll be accepting questions from our listening audience very shortly, and we're not able to post in the chat room for whatever reason, but please, if you have any questions, be sure to call in at 347-884-8121. So the next question is, what are some of the pros and cons of a community benefits agreement, you know, especially from the developer's perspective? And I realize that you're an attorney, but also if there is a downside for the community, what is it? And I think what you described was not necessarily a downside, but it's something that we need to be mindful of because we're always rattling cages demanding that developers give us X, Y, Z, but we don't think about our end. But I'm asking you the question. I'm sorry.
Sure. No problem. So, yes, I mean, the Law Project does represent community coalitions in community benefits agreement negotiations and campaigns. So, you know, we don't represent developers. But what I can say is that certainly with a community benefits agreement, there is benefit to both sides from having a transparent process, a transparent negotiation between the developer and the community, so that the developer understands the concerns on the ground, and a partnership really can be put in place for local hiring, for making sure that, you know, the eventual occupants of the development are going to be paying good livable wages for people who live in the community, for example. And, you know, as I mentioned, there are obligations that flow both ways when a CBA is put in place, and really getting the agreement signed is only the beginning of the process. The community needs to be prepared to be able to monitor and enforce the agreement. Mm-hmm. And so there, for example, with local hiring, there are workforce development structures that need to be put in place and monitored to make sure that, you know, this developer has said they're hiring locally, but the community needs to make sure that it's ready to provide that source of local workers that are ready and trained and on the job as soon as possible, as soon as the developer needs people on the ground. And so in terms of, you know, of the developer's perspective, I would say also there are studies that have been done on, you know, on paying livable wages and on how that decreases turnover. So that's, you know, a cost savings for developers as well.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have any other, were there any other specifics on that you wanted me to elaborate on?
No, I think that was really, really helpful. You know, I live in North Lawndale, and, you know, community benefits agreements are a hot button. You know, people talk about them. We, the folks in the community, talk about them, but we only tend to talk about what we want and not necessarily, you know, our end of the bargain, so to speak. So there's responsibility on both sides, and I guess I needed to be reminded of that. So that's something that really needs to be taken into account of any implementation planning. So that helps. And I'm wondering, I'm sorry, Jody, did you?
I was just going to say often with the example I gave about kind of creating the workforce development pipeline, often with the CBA, one of the investments that a developer will make will be to provide some seed funding for the coalition to be able to develop that pipeline so that's part of the CBA itself.
So do you know anybody in Chicago that's already doing CBAs? I know they're pretty popular on the two coasts, but I've never heard of anybody in Chicago doing anything like that.
Sure. Well, the Law Project is currently working with three community coalitions, I should say, campaigns that are actively working towards securing community benefits agreements locally. And I can tell you a little bit about each one of those, but also I should mention that there was a successful CBA campaign tied to the Chicago Olympic bid several years ago, that CBA didn't come to pass because Chicago didn't get the Olympics. But that was a successful negotiation between the community and the county, as well as the city. The three active campaigns right now are, one is with the West Side Community Benefits Coalition that's focused on the Illinois Medical District, on the Stroger Hospital expansion there, as well as on a private mixed-use development. And there is an ongoing, long-time CBA campaign on the southeast side of Chicago related to in conjunction with the redevelopment of the U.S. Steel Southworks site. There was a developer identified for that, and negotiations had been moving forward, but then that developer did back out for unrelated reasons, and now the parcel has been divided into four smaller parcels, so there's a potential for up to four community benefits agreements in that part of the city. And then there's also the one that's been getting a bit of press is the Obama Library CBA campaign that's ongoing in the Jackson Park area right now. And TLP is providing legal support to all of those campaigns.
Oh, awesome, awesome. So I'm sure for years to come we will hear stories and how this all unfolds. You know what?
Yes.
We'll not take questions. I'm sorry, Jody, were you saying something?
Oh, this is Allegra. I just said yes. I was just agreeing with you.
Oh, okay. I can't tell your voice from Jody's. I'm so sorry. I keep calling you Jody.
That's okay.
Okay. So we'll now take questions from our callers. Our call-in number is 347-884-8121. And we have two people on the line. I'm not sure if they were calling to just listen or if they were calling to ask a question. So I'm going to ask, you know, the folks who are on the line if they have any questions. The first person I'm asking is area code 832-629-1255. I see you called in. Do you have a question of our attorneys? Okay, I didn't get an answer, and he or she hung up. Hi, caller, you're on the line. I've got 773-678-9541. Did you have a question of our attorneys?
Well, you do have me, Miss Valerie. It's Miss Naomi, and I just wanted to let you all know, you and Jody and Allegra, that I am so proud and so grateful for the work that you're doing, the support that you're providing. I am affiliated with the Bronzeville Regional Collective. Blacks and Green is a member of the BRC, for short, which is a part of the, and here it goes, it's a really long name, but the Obama Presidential Library, Southside Community Benefits Agreement Coalition. And we have been working with COCO and with STOP and with the Prayer and Action Collective of the University of Chicago. Those are students who have prayer every Thursday for year after year on the missions that they are also in action, thus prayer and action. Of course, we all know STOP and COCO for their wise leadership and direct action. And I just wanted to share briefly that, among other things, we have a document we call the Top 10 Reasons We Need a CBA. And I'd like for listeners to be in touch if they'd like to get a copy of it. I emailed one over to you shortly. We're working on such a quick turnaround on so many different projects, but this one is near and dear to us, and we believe that for anyone who thinks that there shouldn't be a community benefits agreement because we're all family, we're all in this together, and we trust our president and love our president, and all of those things are true, but none of them are reasons why we shouldn't have a writing with explicit terms and timetables and metrics and the things that we know that we're talking about, but we don't always mean the same thing when we're saying the same words. So I'm calling to say thank you. I'm calling to let listeners know that they can be a part of our advocacy team. If I could give my email or phone number, however, I don't know your protocol.
Give both. That would be great.
And we I'm Naomi Davis. Yes, Naomi Davis at blacksingreen.org. That's blacksingreen.org. My number where I can be reached is 773-678-9541. And Allegra, thank you for being part of our team. Jody, the Law Project is awesome, and we know there's a wide spectrum of good stuff that you're doing. And Miss Valerie Leonard, you know you're one of my sheroes, so keep up the good work.
Oh, thank you, and thank you so much for calling, and I thank you guys for coming out to North Lawndale. You're going to be part of a panel discussion, is that correct, on Wednesday? Wednesday,
yes.
The 9th, November 9th, we will go from 6 o'clock p.m. till 9 p.m. Not 9 p.m., no way. 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at the Lawndale Community Church, and we will have a panel discussion on community benefits agreements, and you'll be part of the panel, and we'll have folks from TLP. Allegra, you'll be there, and then other community activists. But I got a couple other people, so I better not go on shamelessly plugging that event. All right? So thank you for calling.
Okay, thank you,
lady. Caller.
Thank you.
Go ahead. Okay, bye-bye. Hi, caller. I've got you on the line. Area code 847-698-8224. Did you have a question?
Hey, Valerie, it's Steve Cohen with Colliers. How you doing?
Oh, pretty good. And you?
Good. You know, I apologize. I jumped on late, so I didn't get to hear everything that Jody was talking about. I really wanted to, but unfortunately, I got on a little bit late, but I wanted to call in, and I did have a couple of questions.
Okay, awesome. And you'll be able to hear the recording. I'll make sure I send you an email with the link. And thank you so much. And let people, you are going to let us know who you represent and all that good stuff, right?
Well, my name's Steve Cohen. I'm an industrial. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, that's okay. No, I was finished.
Yeah, so I'm Steve Cohen, and I'm an industrial real estate broker with Colliers, and I'm working with the Clarius guys who have entered into an agreement with the city of Chicago to acquire about 23 acres at the Roosevelt-Costner, Kildare and Fifth Avenue. And it's not a done deal, obviously, but it's something that Clarius would like to do, and the alderman has been supportive, and the city's been supportive, and it's something there that we're pretty excited about because we feel like there's a real lack of modern distribution manufacturing space in the city of Chicago, and we think the location is really perfect for it, and it's a good opportunity that the tenants and buyers will be interested in the area. And that's really kind of what I wanted to ask is, how do the users of the space, not the developer, but what happens, there's no user yet, but if they build spec buildings there and then users come along that want to lease or buy portions of the site for their operation, how do those users end up interacting with the community development agreements, and has it stopped users from going? Does it help the users? What is the interaction there?
Sure. This is Allegra with TLP. And what I can tell you is, so in some community benefits agreements, there are obligations that flow to those end users, we can call them, those who end up, you know, leasing space or perhaps buying space in the development. And so some CBAs flow to those entities and some do not. For the ones that do, I can tell you that the developers have been, you know, willing to say that they will give priority to, for example, to entities that are willing to pay certain wage floors, or that they will give priority to entities that are willing to hire X percentage from the local community, for example. Those are some of the things that I can think of, you know, right off the bat. I believe the Staples Center CBA in the Los Angeles area carries some of those obligations that flowed to the end users. I'm not 100% sure, but I can look that up and get back to you on that.
Right. That's the one. That was a 2001 development?
Yes. And in some ways that is a great one for us to look at because there's been several, you know, many years now of implementation and monitoring that have gone into that. So we can say that it's been successful in many ways and that there hasn't been, to my knowledge, difficulty with finding and retaining end users to set up shop there in that development.
I think that's the one where 70% of the jobs need to be living wage. Are the living wage agreements and the community development agreements different than the city of Chicago's already existing regulations?
So typically, yes, they are. I mean, it depends on the agreement itself in terms of what the community identifies as what they would like to have the developer commit to. But as I mentioned earlier in the broadcast, there are certain requirements that are tied to TIF incentives and other public dollar incentives that developers receive in terms of paying prevailing wages for construction workers, which are that's kind of standard, and that's probably going to happen anyway with any major construction development. There are requirements for certain percentage of minority contracting, women-owned enterprise contracting, things along those lines. So a CBA will typically take those into account, but then also raise the floor on those and make additional requests and ask the developer to make additional investments in the local community, perhaps by committing to hire from certain populations that may have been traditionally more difficult to employ, or to raising the minimum requirements for minority contracting or local hiring, things along those lines.
Okay,
the city of Chicago.
Wait, thank you so much. You know, we have all of 17 seconds left. I'm going to have to put you guys in contact with one another. But I wanted to say thank you, Atler, Allegra Fisher, Thank you, Steve, for coming on to the show. I hope you can come to the panel discussion on Wednesday and hear more. So without further ado, I'm going to have to end this episode, and I thank all of our listening audience, and I do apologize I didn't get to every question. This has been a very lively discussion. So I hope that you can tune in on next week when we will have people from the Chicago Reporter talking about their crime, well, their Chicago police database. So until then, take care, and thank everyone for listening. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Valerie.